Welcome to the Darrell McClain Show. I'm your host, Darrell McClain, and let's get into our episode.
Simply search for the T-Bone and Chick Brew podcast, available wherever fine podcasts are sold.
The Darrell McClain Show is fully listener-supported, independent media that won't lead you to tribalism. You can get a membership for as little as $3 a month at www.patreon.com/TheDarrellMcClain Show.
We talk about a lot of serious topics on this show. One very serious topic is women's health. One company that stood out to me was VSlay.com because the owner is very transparent about her own struggles in the women's health department and has great customer service, great deals, and frequent sales. You can check her out, her great customer service, products about women's health, and frequent sales at www.VSlay.com. That is www.VSlay.com.
The moment we begin to choose love, we begin to move against domination, against oppression. The moment we choose to love, we begin to move towards freedom to act in ways that liberate ourselves and others. A quote today comes from Bell Hooks. Let's get into the show. We're going to start off with the new revelations of the text messages that came from the chief of staff, Mark Meadows' phone. It's going to be talking about the absurdity of everything that happened on January 6th and the fact that there were several well-known TV anchors, media figures from Fox News who were pleading with the president's chief of staff to do something about what they were seeing, including Donald Trump Jr., who even practically said it needed to go home, they needed to go home, etc. Check this out, this audio. We'll talk about it on the other side.
Texts, including from Trump administration officials, urged immediate action by the president. Quote, POTUS has to come out firmly and tell the protesters to dissipate. Someone is going to get killed. In another, Mark, he needs to stop this now. A third, in all caps, tell them to go home. A fourth, and I quote, POTUS needs to calm this shit down. Indeed, according to the records, multiple Fox News hosts knew the president needed to act immediately. They texted Mr. Meadows, and he has turned over those texts. Quote, Mark, the president needs to tell people in the Capitol to go home. This is hurting all of us. He is destroying his legacy, Laura Ingram wrote. Please get him on TV, destroying everything you have accomplished, Brian Kilmeade texted. Quote, can he make a statement? Ask people to leave the Capitol, Sean Hannity urged. As the violence continued, one of the president's sons texted Mr. Meadows, quote, he's got to condemn this shit ASAP. The Capitol Police tweet is not enough, Donald Trump Jr. texted. Meadows responded, quote, I'm pushing it hard. I agree. Still, President Trump did not immediately act. Donald Trump Jr. texted again and again, urging action by the president. Quote, "We need an Oval Office address. He has to lead now. It has gone too far and gotten out of hand," end quote. But hours passed.
So that was the voice of Liz Cheney. Liz Cheney obviously is a Republican, one of the never Trump Republicans, not particularly good on policy, in my opinion. I mean, she still, she calls herself never Trump, but when you look at the record, she voted lock, step, and key with Donald Trump on 95% of all the legislation he passed. So if she doesn't like President Trump, is more just optics. She probably, but at any rate, she reads off that stuff, which there's a lot of things that I thought about when I was listening to what she was saying. The first observation was just plainly, why do news journalists, our anchors, TV personalities, and commentators who are supposed to be calling balls and strikes, why do they have the phone number to the president's chief of staff? And so that is what I thought about, and it's kind of the larger critique I have of all journalism, about how instead of holding people in power to account, they do their best to sit next to people in power. It shows in those text messages also that what was being said at the moment, it was the exact opposite of what was said that night. Laura Ingraham personally got on TV that night and said that it was Antifa, and that the people had come dressed up like the president's supporters. But according to the text, that's not what she actually believed. She wouldn't have been telling anybody to tell the president to send his supporters home if she didn't think that they were actually his supporters. So it was a peek behind the curtain of what these people would say to their audience, but what they say in private. Now they sit around and they say it was no big deal. It was pretty much just a peaceful protest. They'll bring up the fact that the only person killed at the actual insurrection was a Trump supporter, Ashley Babbitt. They will say that, but according to their private communications, they thought it was a big deal. It was bad for the country. It would ruin the country. It would destroy everything Donald Trump had worked for. It would ruin the entire legacy. This was bad for all of us. That's what they privately thought. And that is, it's kind of a shame to see what a lot of us already knew, which is that a lot of times when they get on TV and say a lot of stuff, that they're not arguing or presenting in good faith.
Answer. For example, the documents confirm that Mr. Meadows used personal Gmail accounts and a personal cell phone to conduct official business and to send communications related to January 6th, and that he also used Signal, the private messenger application. Had Mr. Meadows been deposed under oath, the committee would have asked him about his handling of official government records, a topic that is not subject to any conceivable legal privilege. This is a critical line of inquiry because we need to know if Mr. Meadows did not properly preserve all of his official emails, texts, and messages and provide them to the National Archives as required by law.
Now, that's only important because from a hypocritical standpoint, remember when Hillary Clinton had her emails and everything on the private server, how there was the big freak out and the quotes of lock her up and everything, and what was on the private server, and how the server wasn't turned over to the National Archives, and how there was private communications and she had no right to have the messages on her personal BlackBerry, etc., etc. And of course, now we see what they say versus what they do when they get in power is completely different. So Mark Meadows, the chief of staff, is doing the same thing that then the Secretary of State and two-time presidential candidate did, or Hillary Clinton. And so It's naked hypocrisy, but that's just kind of the name of the game.
And don't forget Laura Ingraham, who said this is hurting all of us. He is destroying his legacy. This is Laura Ingraham, who mocked the police officers after they testified before the committee. Look, if you are someone who believes Fox News anchors like Laura Ingraham, if you are a fan of Donald Trump Jr., what are you thinking tonight? If you are hearing this, you should be thinking, I think, that these people are imposters, that they have been double dealing you. Here yeah. they were texting Mark Meadows the day of the insurrection and saying, get this to stop. This is terrible for all of us. And yet now they are portraying the insurrection as something that was close to a walk in the park,
right?
So that the police officers should be mocked, that Donald Trump did nothing wrong.
So to your point, what we heard tonight, I believe, is just a small number of the text messages. I was told by a source familiar that there are hundreds of text messages that the committee thinks are relevant. And so I think there's more to come. This was just the beginning. This is a day of reckoning for Donald Trump because we don't like to use the word lying as reporters, but look at these Fox News hosts. They have been lying. They were lying on January 6th. They go on social media every day. They go on the air and pretend January 6th was not a big deal.
Now, that clip you just heard was from CNN. And here is the problem. Although what I do happen to agree with those two people said, that is not going to get anywhere, right? Because CNN has terrible ratings, and somebody like Sean Hannity alone gets more ratings by himself than probably the hold of all the anchors and commentators and journalists on CNN put together. Fox News sits at the very top of the media mountain, and they have sat there for a very long time, and they know how to craft a narrative and get the audience to repeat it verbatim. And they also know how to do something else that's very important in media, and that is to ignore stories that you don't want to highlight. And a lot of times it's not so much of what you say, it's what you know is true that you don't say, what you know is true that you don't show. And I highly doubt that Fox News is going to do a segment where they bash themselves, their network team, the stars of the team. The only person that was missing from those text messages that were read by Liz Cheney was Tucker Carlson. But you had Steve Ducey, you had Laura Ingraham, you have Sean Hannity. Those are the big ones over at the network. And of course, you have the president's son, and I think the oldest son, Donald Jr. So what you now know, it'll be your job to spread that information, because more than likely for a very long time, the Fox News audience won't know about it. Now, of course, when this type of thing happens, you have the good, the bad, and the ugly of media takes. One that was particularly good, and I'm going to end this topic, at least when it comes to the pundits, about this one, this particular topic. But we're going to go to Brian Tyler Cohen, and he did a pretty good job explaining this.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It goes without saying that this show does not happen without listener support. Support the Darrell McClain Show by going to www.patreon.com and getting a membership for $3. Or you can go to buzzsprouts.com/the Darrell McClain Show and hit the subscribe button and join there. Many ways to donate to the show. Independent media that won't reinforce tribalism. We have one planet. Nobody is leaving, so let us reason together. www.patreon.com/TheDarrellMcLain Show or go to Buzzsprouts and to The Darrell McLain Show and subscribe.
According to the records, multiple Fox News hosts knew the president needed to act immediately. They texted Mr. Meadows, and he has turned over those texts. Quote, Mark, the president needs to tell people in the Capitol to go home. This is hurting all of us. He is destroying his legacy, Laura Ingraham wrote. Please get him on TV. Destroying everything you have accomplished, Brian Kilmeade texted. Quote, can he make a statement? Ask people to leave the Capitol, Sean Hannity urged. As the violence continued, one of the president's sons texted Mr. Meadows, quote, he's got to condemn this shit ASAP. The Capitol Police tweet is not enough, Donald Trump Jr. texted. Meadows responded, quote, I'm pushing it hard. I agree. Still, President Trump did not immediately act. Donald Trump Jr. texted again and again, urging action by the president. Quote, we need an Oval Office address. He has to lead now. It has gone too far and gotten out of hand, end quote. But hours passed without necessary action by the president. Mr. Meadows received numerous text messages, which he has produced without any privilege claim, imploring that Mr. Trump take the specific action we all knew his duty required. These text messages leave no doubt the White House knew exactly what was happening here at the Capitol. Members of Congress, the press, and others wrote to Mark Meadows as the attack was underway. One text Mr. Meadows received said, quote, we are under siege here at the Capitol. Another, quote, they have breached the Capitol. In a third, Mark, protesters are literally storming the Capitol, breaking windows on doors, rushing in. Is Trump going to say something? A fourth, there's an armed standoff at the House chamber door. And another from someone inside the Capitol. We are all helpless. Dozens of texts, including from Trump administration officials, urged immediate action by the president. Quote, POTUS has to come out firmly and tell the protesters to dissipate. Someone is going to get killed. In another, Mark, he needs to stop this now. A third, in all caps, tell them to go home. A fourth, and I quote, POTUS needs to calm this shit down.
In other words, they knew. All those Fox hosts who pretended the Capitol was being stormed by Antifa, they knew. All those members of Congress that pretended it was just a tourist visit, they knew. All those Republicans who tried to claim that the insurrection was justified, they knew. They will lie to their supporters while their very own text messages, sent while they're not performing for their marks, betray the fact that they knew better. Now, if you're wondering why former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows was so reluctant to hand over any information to the January 6th committee, it's because this is what he's been hiding. Texts from Fox News' Laura Ingraham and Brian Kilmeade and Sean Hannity, from Republican lawmakers, even from Trump's own son, Donald Trump Jr., who apparently doesn't have a direct line of communication to his own father. But also, I feel like we already kind of knew that. But what this shows, first and foremost, is that while Trump's allies have fallen over themselves to conjure up every excuse in the book to pretend that the insurrection somehow wasn't an insurrection, privately, candidly, they were well aware that this was an attack on our democracy. An attack so serious that multiple people conceded that this would destroy Trump's legacy. That is a heavy charge to drop if you don't mean it, especially considering that these are people who would walk over hot coals for him. So for these people, these sycophants, to acknowledge not just that he screwed up, but that he destroyed his legacy, conveys that they knew full well the gravity of what was happening that day. But what's worse, leagues worse, is what they said publicly. Because while Laura Ingraham was texting Mark Meadows, "This is hurting all of us, he is destroying his legacy," here's what she was saying on air.
"Today, the Capitol was under siege by people who can only be described as antithetical to the MAGA movement. Now, they were likely not all Trump supporters, and there are some reports that Antifa sympathizers may have been sprinkled throughout the crowd. We'll have more on that later."
So we knew this would happen when you had a huge group of people descending on Capitol Hill, when you have members of the Trump support organizations, and then Antifa threatening to show up at the same time. We'll learn more about to the extent that that happens.
The Washington Times is reporting that at least two Antifa were spotted in the crowd.
While Sean Hannity was texting Mark Meadows, "Can he make a statement?" knowing full well that these were Trump supporters who would listen to him if he made a statement, here's what he was saying on air.
"Everyone knew going in today that this crowd was going to be massive. They knew there were hundreds of thousands of people that came to town. We also knew that there's always bad actors that will infiltrate large crowds."
Meaning they made the conscious decision to spread disinformation. Again, they knew that these were Trump supporters. The fact that they were so intent on Trump speaking to these people, knowing that they would listen to him and only him, is a tacit admission of exactly that. And yet they chose to go on national television one by one and lie, because their goal was to absolve the guy who caused this of any and all guilt. They knew the truth and chose to lie. And by the way, if you want proof that both sides aren't the same, the quote-unquote left just banished Chris Cuomo for breaking journalistic ethics by helping his brother, then governor of New York, survive a PR crisis. The right acts as a crisis comms team for a president during an insurrection on the U.S. Capitol, and yet still they're the darlings of conservative media to this day. But sure, both sides are definitely the same. Imagine for a moment if Rachel Maddow or Anderson Cooper or Don Lemon or Jim Acosta texted Obama's chief of staff to tell him to make a speech at a certain time because they thought that it would be better for him politically. Imagine what right-wing media, what Fox News itself would say. Do you think they'd ever let those anchors forget it? Do you think that the news cycle slamming the corrupt, complicit, unethical reporters on the left would ever end? Yeah, me neither. And yet, funny enough, these Fox hosts haven't even acknowledged their own texts. Forget about spinning it. They're just going to pretend that it never happened. Why? Because they know right-wing media is a closed feedback loop. And so they're banking on their supporters simply never finding out. They don't feel an ounce of obligation to tell the truth, because the point isn't actually reporting news, it's serving a steady diet of carefully curated propaganda. Honestly, the January 6th committee should haul all of these people in so that they can admit, under oath, that they sent these texts. And then they can explain to the committee why they were so confident that Antifa was behind the January 6th insurrection. Confident enough to report it on air to millions of people if they were privately insisting that only Trump had the power to call it off. If it was really Antifa that they were claiming to their viewers, why would they need Donald Trump to make a statement? Why would Antifa listen to Trump? They wouldn't. And Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity and Brian Kilmeade know that, but the disinformation is the point. I'll end with this. Congress, attorneys general, and the DOJ need to be able to see what we are up against. This is a coordinated disinformation machine, a collection of people so shameless, so ruthless, so deceptive that they will do whatever it takes to achieve their goals. If we do not take action against these people, we are giving them tacit permission to do it again. And next time, they won't fail. They've had time to hone their message and manipulate their supporters through a relentless barrage of lies. It's time for those in charge to wake the hell up and start treating this ongoing assault on our democracy for exactly what it is, and to finally take action while we still have the chance.
So late last night, as a result of all this, the Justice Department actually got a referral from Congress, who voted to hold the former chief of staff in contempt. And it is not happening almost over like 100 years. I think only two people who are former elected officials have been hauled up on contempt charges. Now the question, of course, is Merrick Garland and their Justice Department going to actually do something about it? Are they going to actually charge Mark Meadows with anything? Steve Bannon, of course, was an easier case because there was nothing that really he could say was, I guess, privileged information. The fact that Mark Meadows, I think, has already played ball and has already released a lot of these text messages that he was initially participating in the January 6th committee, the fact that he has now withdrawn, I don't think he's going to really have a leg to stand on when it comes to something like him saying that his communications are privileged, and you know, et cetera. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the Justice Department under Merrick Garland does. I don't have a lot of faith in electoral politics. I vote for more of a harm reduction model than a wide sweeping change model, etc. But Democrats are historically very cowardly when it comes to things like that. So I don't really know if Merrick Garland is going to hold a former chief of staff, a former elected Republican official as well, if he's going to actually press those charges. I want to play this one more clip about text messages, but in a different vein, because these were actually people who are still sitting in the legislature.
How did the following text from a House lawmaker influence Trump's plans to overthrow Joe Biden's Electoral College majority of 306 to 232 after Joe Biden beat Donald Trump? And here's what that lawmaker wrote him. On November 4th, a member of this body wrote to Meadows, "Here's an aggressive strategy. One day after the election, why can't the states of Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and other Republican-controlled state houses declare this is BS, where conflicts and election not called that night, and just send their own electors to vote and have it go to the SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States?" How did this text influence the planning of Mark Meadows and Donald Trump to try to destroy the lawful Electoral College majority that had been established by the people of the United States and the states for Joe Biden? Those are the kinds of questions that we have a right to ask Mark Meadows.
We need also to ask him about text messages which he provided to our committee that show an official in Georgia texting Mr. Meadows during the Trump Raffensperger call, saying that they, quote, need to end this call, unquote, and emphasizing, quote, "I don't think this will be productive much longer," end quote. We need to talk to Mr. Meadows about that.
One of the texts to Meadows on January 3rd came from an unknown caller and referred to efforts to replace the leadership of the Department of Justice and said the following: "I heard Jeff Clark is getting put in on Monday. That's amazing. It will make a lot of patriots happy, and I'm personally so proud that you are at the tip of the spear, and I could call you a friend." On January 3rd, Mr. Meadows was exchanging text messages with a lawmaker about the pressure campaign to get state legislatures to overturn the results of the election. In one text message to a lawmaker, Mr. Meadows wrote, he presumably being President Trump, quote, "He thinks the legislatures have the power, but the VP has power too," end quote. The power to do what? We could guess the power to overturn the election results, the power to reject the will of the voters. And days later, a violent mob tried to get Vice President Pence to do just that. We'd like to ask Mr. Meadows about that.
Meadows' testimony will bear on another fundamental question before this committee, and that is whether Donald J. Trump, through action or inaction, corruptly sought to obstruct or impede Congress's official proceeding to count electoral votes.
Now,
that was the whole meat and potatoes right there, because U.S. Code Title 18, Section 1512 actually says, whoever corruptly obstructs, influences, or impedes an official proceeding or attempts to do so shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both. So that is why they are digging into all those messages, because their hope is that they could find the former president guilty of violating that U.S. Code Title 18, Section 1520, which says, again, whoever corruptly obstructs, influences, or impedes an official proceeding or attempts to do so shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both. So that's what those January 6th committee hearings are all about. That is the root of what this all is. It's not just a fact-finding thing. The Democrats do have an endgame. But, like I said, I'm not really sure if the Justice Department is going to have a stomach for what I think that the committee would like to happen. I don't have a lot of faith when it comes to the Democrats actually fighting for any legislation that they actually claim they want to fight for. I witnessed a lot of this living in the Commonwealth. I always remembered the local Democratic Party running endlessly on the right to work stuff and how they were going to end it and blah, blah, blah. And the second they got in power, 12 years later, none of that happened. I happened to, before I started recording, heard an amazing, I'll say a rant about how I actually feel about the nature of things when it comes to policies that come out of the Democrats and their lackluster way of getting things approved or whatever. And I try to be a bit measured and unattached from both of these parties. But this was somebody who said something that was so fired up, and I gotta let you guys hear it.
A story that caught my attention just before we went live today. And so I wanted to do a little bit of a free flow rant on it, because nothing infuriates me more than the feckless nature of Democrats in Congress. So let's get right to it. You know, it's been a while since Americans heard anything about the ongoing negotiations in regard to Biden's Build Back Better agenda. You know, the legislation that would actually include provisions that would improve Americans' lives, you know, do things like provide universal childcare, universal pre-K, some help with childcare. Maybe a little bit of time off that would be mandatory paid family leave. You know, those provisions that would really improve people's lives. Now it turns out, according to an NBC News reporter, Jesse Rodriguez, that Senate Democrats have decided to move on. In fact, they're shelving the Build Back Better agenda and instead allegedly focusing aggressively on voting rights. So, Democrats apparently don't know how to win. They know how to pressure the American people over and over again in one election cycle after the next to vote for them. They know how to shame voters if they don't go to the polls and vote for them, because they might feel uninspired by, you know, the lack of representation they get from Democratic lawmakers. They know how to shame, they know how to fearmonger about the other side, they know how to campaign about what a monumental threat someone like Donald Trump is. But once they hold the levers of power, once they're in charge of Congress, once they take control of the executive branch, they then turn around and give you all these pathetic excuses for why they can't accomplish a damn thing to improve your life. Now, let's take a little step back, okay? Because I want to give the full context for what really happened and why it is that I'm as salty as I am in this given moment, okay? Biden's agenda initially was one piece of legislation, a multi-trillion dollar piece of legislation that included both physical infrastructure and what he referred to as human infrastructure. Now, the human infrastructure was basically all of those provisions that I mentioned earlier. Okay, help with elder care, universal pre-K, paid family leave, all of these things that would actually help ordinary Americans. At some point, in order to give this illusion that bipartisanship is still possible in Congress, Biden decided and agreed to essentially split that piece of legislation up into two parts, okay? And one of them ended up being the physical infrastructure bill that corporations love because there's room for them to benefit off of it. And then all the human infrastructure, all of the important provisions that corporate America is not in favor of, that GOP lawmakers certainly aren't in favor of, and corporate Democrats are paid to be against, ends up going in a separate bill. The Build Back Better agenda ends up essentially being separated from physical infrastructure. And wow, would you look at that? The corporate handout bill, otherwise known as the bipartisan infrastructure bill, breezes on through. Okay, we got that done. Nancy Pelosi, House leadership, okay, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, at first promised that there would be no passage of the bipartisan infrastructure bill until there was passage of the Build Back Better agenda, the social spending bill. She reneged on that promise after she received light pressure from moderate Democrats in the House. So she lied. Let's just keep it real. She lied. She reneged. Call it whatever you want. She didn't end up fulfilling what she promised to do as House Speaker. And then you have corporate media giving her a massive pat on the back as if she's a master legislator who accomplished something so incredible. Let me just say, accomplishing legislation on behalf of corporate donors is not really much of an accomplishment. That is the easiest thing to do as a lawmaker in this country, where legalized bribery has led to complete corporate rule. The real question is, well, what happened to the Build Back Better agenda? What happened to the social spending? Oh, they're shelving it now. And for all the progressive lawmakers in the House who ended up reneging themselves by voting in favor of the bipartisan infrastructure bill, lawmakers, harsh words, but it's true. They turned their backs on the American people. They turned their backs on their voters. And sure, they're gonna, you know, give you all of these cutesy little fantasy stories about how the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which allocates a measly $550 billion in new spending, is going to do amazing things for the American people. It's going to do incredible things for our infrastructure. They leave out that it's also going to privatize public infrastructure, which means that corporations will be in charge of roads and bridges and parts of the infrastructure that we get to use right now for free. But once corporations take over, they're going to implement those tolls. They're going to implement fees. It's going to be a little more expensive to just get to and from work. So that's what they accomplished with the bipartisan infrastructure bill. The fact that you had Republican lawmakers also vote in favor of that bill tells you quite a bit. It means that their donors wanted it. Corporate America was salivating over it. If Biden was genuine in wanting to pass his full agenda, he wouldn't have split his legislation into two bills. And if Democratic leadership in Congress was genuine in wanting to pass that bill, in passing Biden's full agenda, they wouldn't allow those two bills, that one piece of legislation, to be split into two. And they certainly wouldn't have passed the bipartisan infrastructure bill without having first passed the social spending bill. This was their play all along. Now, that's speculation, but how could you not think that? I mean, these are lawmakers. They know to some extent what they're doing. I don't think that they're all stupid. They know that if they split the bill into two different parts, one being favored by corporate America and the other being favored by their donors, gee, I wonder what's going to happen. And after the leader of the Progressive Caucus, Pramila Jayapal, decided to fold and play ball with Nancy Pelosi and corporate Democrats, what does she get in return? You know what she got in return? Nancy Pelosi throwing a fit, not taking her seriously, not speaking to her for some number of days, according to a CNN article that we talked about on the show recently. What does she get in return? It's just so incredibly pathetic. Now let's go back to the claim that the Senate will now aggressively focus on voting rights. No, they won't. In order to pass a voting rights bill, whether it's the original voting rights bill that's more robust or Senator Joe Manchin's pared back voting rights bill, which does away with any provision that would reform campaign finance, they would need to reform the filibuster. They would need to either do away with or reform the legislative filibuster, which requires 60 senators to vote in favor of any piece of legislation in order for it to pass. You think you're going to get 60 senators to vote in favor of a voting rights bill in a 50-50 split Senate? That ain't going to happen. You think they're going to reform the filibuster? That ain't going to happen. You have at least two vociferous corporate Democrats in the Senate who refuse to do a damn thing about the legislative filibuster. And they have the audacity to now turn around and tell you, the American people, yeah, you know, we're going to shelve Build Back Better for now because we want to aggressively focus on voting rights. They're lying to you and they're insulting your intelligence. And so when the Democratic Party experiences the shellacking that they deserve in the midterm elections, don't let them tell you that they lost because of voter apathy. Don't let them tell you that they lost because people wouldn't get out the vote. Don't let them tell you that they lost because progressives like me want to hold them accountable for their gross, feckless behavior. They're the ones who failed. They're the ones who turned their backs on the American people. They're the ones who use the same games over and over again in every single election cycle. The thing that is incredibly unfair about all of this is that while they deserve to lose, there's no question that they deserve to lose. We don't deserve the Republican Party. We don't deserve these vicious lawmakers who essentially just focus on their hatred of people of color, their hatred of anyone who doesn't conform to their lifestyle and what they deem acceptable. I mean, the Republican Party is nothing more than manufactured culture wars day in, day out. We don't deserve that. They're not going to do anything better for us. But Democrats, they lose, and they lose on purpose. They're paid to lose by their donors. And really, the only thing that gave me a little sliver of hope during the Biden administration was that progressives would really hold the line, that progressives would do what needed to be done, and use whatever leverage they have to get provisions that Americans desperately need. But even some of those progressives, not all of them, but some of those progressives let us down as well. And as negative as I sound right now, and as black-pilled as I might sound right now, I'm not experiencing this sense of hopelessness, because there are good things happening in the country. We're seeing labor movement that we have not seen in this country for decades. And really, that's our only hope at this point. I've given up on Congress. I'm going to vote strategically. You know, I'm not a nihilist. But to only focus on electoral politics is a massive mistake, because if workers don't have power, if the people are not organized, then Congress really doesn't feel like they need to answer to us. They certainly do feel like they need to answer to their corporate donors and the corporate overlords who actually rule this country. But if workers aren't organized and if they don't flex their power, we're going to keep running into the same issue over and over and over again. Take a look at this country's history. The only time ordinary Americans received policies that they deserved, worker protections that they deserved, was when they got together, they organized their workplaces, and they applied pressure. That's the only thing that works, period. I'm done with Congress. Vote strategically, vote however you feel you need to vote. But I'm done with all of these games and all of these ridiculous campaigns about how these lawmakers are going to really represent the working American and how they're going to change things around and speak truth to power. They're not going to do any of it. Because all of the incentives right now are in the wrong place. Under the system of legalized bribery, the incentives are in the wrong place, period.
You can't talk about incentives being in the wrong place without thinking of the good old senator from West Virginia, Joe Manchin, who's him and his daughter and practically anybody you can scratch that's around him. Their incentives are always to do what does not benefit the constituents in West Virginia. So just like you'd expect, Joe Manchin has done what people do in politics. It has sold out the people of West Virginia for the donors who fund his campaign.
I've always said this, Brett. If I can't go home and explain it to the people of West Virginia, I can't vote for it. And I cannot vote to continue with this piece of legislation. I just can't. I've tried everything humanly possible. I can't get there.
You're done. This is a no.
This is a no.
So the White House put out a statement from the press secretary, Jane Psaki, that said Senator Manchin's comments this morning on Fox are at odds with his discussion this week with the president, with White House staff, and with his own public utterances. Weeks ago, Senator Manchin committed to the president at his home in Wilmington to support the Build Back Better framework that the president then subsequently announced. Senator Manchin pledged repeatedly to negotiate on finalizing that framework in good faith. On Tuesday of this week, Senator Manchin came to the White House and submitted to the president in person directly a writing outlining for a Build Back Better bill that was the same size and scope as the president's framework and covered many of the same priorities. While that framework was missing key priorities, we believe it could lead to a compromise acceptable to all. Senator Manchin promised to continue conversation in the days ahead and to work with us to reach that common ground. In his comments on Fox and in written statements indicate an end to that effort, they represent a sudden and inexplicable reversal in his position and a breach of his comments to and commitments to the president and the senator's colleagues in the House and the Senate. Senator Manchin's claims that this change of position is related to inflation, but the tank he often cites on the Build Back Better, the Penn Wharton Budget Institute issued a report less than 48 hours ago that noted that the Build Back Better Act will have virtually no impact on inflation in the short term, and in the long term, the policies it includes will ease inflationary pressures. Many leading economists with whom Senator Manchin frequently consult also support the Build Back Better bill. Build Back Better lowers costs that families pay. It will reduce what families pay for child care. It will reduce what they pay for prescription drugs. It will lower health care premiums. And it puts tax cuts in the pockets of families with kids. If someone is concerned about the impact that the higher prices are having on the families, this bill gives them a break. Senator Manchin cited the deficit concerns in his statement, but the plan is fully paid for, is the most fiscally responsible major bill that Congress has considered in years, and reduces the deficits in the long run. The Congressional Budget Office report that Senator cites analyzed an unfunded extension of the Build Back Better. That's not what the president has proposed, not the bill the Senate would vote on, and not what the president would support. Senator Manchin knows that. The president has told him repeatedly, including this week, face to face. Likewise, Senator Manchin's statements about the climate provisions and the Build Back Better are wrong. Build Back Better will produce a job-creating, clean energy future for this country, including West Virginia. Just as Senator Manchin reversed his position on Build Back Better this morning, we will continue to press him to see if he'll reverse his position yet again to honor his prior commitments and be true to his word.
In the meantime, Senator Manchin will have to explain to those families paying $1,000 a month for insulin why they need to keep paying that instead of the $35 for the vital medicine. He will have to explain to the nearly 2 million women who get the affordable daycare they need to return to work on why he opposes a plan to get them the help they need. Maybe Senator Manchin can explain to the millions of children who have been lifted out of poverty, partly due to the child tax credit, why he wants to end that program that is helping them to achieve this milestone. We cannot. We are proud of what we have gotten done in 2021, the American Rescue Plan, the fastest decrease in unemployment in U.S. history, the bipartisan infrastructure law, over 2 million Americans vaccinated, schools reopened, the fastest rollout of vaccine to children anywhere in the world, and historic appointments to the federal judiciary. But we will not relent in the fight to help the Americans with child care, health care, prescription drug costs, and elder care, and to combat climate change. The fight for the Build Back Better is too important to give up. We will find a way to move forward next year. Now, to add insult to injury, according to a report by the Huffington Post, the West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin allegedly told co-workers in the Senate that one of the reasons he didn't want to vote for the Build Back Better bill was that low-income people would waste the money in the Build Back Better plan. In the report, Manchin told the people that the parents who receive the $300 per child would spend the money on drugs. Manchin also reportedly told fellow senators that he was against the bill's paid sick leave because people would lie about their illness for hunting trips. According to Yahoo, someone close to Manchin said Manchin had concerns about grandparents taking care of children whose parents struggle with addiction and that the caretakers would not qualify for the tax credits. On Monday, Manchin was on talk line with Hoppy Kersival and express his feelings on grandparents and their access to payments. Quote, we have children that are not living with their grandparents, and really, the assistance that we give to them is in the welfare system. Do you think that we can basically target that child? He said, make sure that the money follows the child. So if a grandparent is raising the child, you're getting the money and not the parent, even though their biological parents who are not capable are not having the desire to raise that child, Manchin said on Sunday. He would not vote for the Build Back Better. And of course, so the ridiculous line, if I can't go back home and tell the people in West Virginia I can't vote for it, Manchin said on Fox News. And there's a big reason Joe Manchin, the Democrat, decided to break the news that he wasn't going to support the Democratic bill, that he was going to tank the Democratic bill from the Democratic president on the Republican television network of Fox News. He didn't go to ABC. He didn't go to CNBC, which is the money station. He didn't go to MSNBC or NBC. He went to Fox News. He went to Fox News because he wanted to deliver that message to Republicans so that when the primaries come up, and when it's time for Joe Manchin to be up for re-election, he could say, oh, yes, yes, yes. I stood up to the people who were trying to do this stuff. And this is what a lot of people were saying was going to happen in the very beginning. Famously, the six Justice Democrats who kept saying that you could not separate the infrastructure bill from the Build Back Better bill, which was being pejoratively called the human infrastructure bill, because the infrastructure bill was a common sense bill that was also a corporate handout. A lot of the stuff in the bill looked like it flat out privatized a lot of public infrastructure. And there was a lot of fear that a lot of toll roads are going to be created and everything else to pay for roads and bridges being fixed in places where there aren't tolls, etc. And the argument was that if you took the infrastructure bill and decoupled it from the human infrastructure bill,
then the infrastructure bill would pass and the human infrastructure bill was going to fail. Okay? And that is exactly what has happened. They were literally saying that the only thing you have to go on is Joe Manchin's word. Yeah, he would try his best to get to the deal. That Joe Manchin had somehow promised something to Joe Biden and that was going to be enough. Well, the people that said that shouldn't have been done because this was going to happen, now here it is. They were right. And that was just the six Justice Democrats. So there we go. Joe Manchin will say, I don't believe in this because I think the parents are wasting money on tax credits for drugs, etc. But it's also, he's got a stake in it. Just last year, Joe Manchin made almost $1 million from a coal plant that he has investment in. About this thing, one of his colleagues, who has been really hitting him hard about it the whole time, Senator Bernie Sanders, said yesterday, Senator Joe Manchin announced he would not support the Build Back Better Act. And if that is the case, he would be prepared to vote no before the working families of West Virginia and America and explain why. We should give Joe Manchin the opportunity to explain to West Virginia and the American people why he opposes taking on the greed of the drug companies and lowering the cost of prescription drugs. We should give Joe Manchin the opportunity to explain to West Virginia seniors why he opposes helping them secure hearing aids, dental care, and eyeglasses they need. We should give Joe Manchin the opportunity to explain to families why their loved ones should age in expensive nursing homes instead of around those who care about them the most. We should give Joe Manchin the opportunity to explain why only children of the wealthy from certain zip codes should have the opportunity to attend pre-K. And we should give Joe Manchin the opportunity to explain why he sides with those who profit from climate change and destruction of the planet for future generations. Now, I know Joe Manchin continues to talk about his concerns over the national debt, but I find it amusing I didn't hear his concerns after voting just this week for a military budget of $778 billion, four times greater than the Build Back Better Act over 10 years and $25 billion more than the president suggested. Forgive me for thinking that maybe, just maybe, something else is at play here. Joe Manchin should have the chance to explain what it is. Let's put this to a vote on the floor of the Senate. So that's the thing that they're going to have to start doing. It's not just, hey, put it up to them. But we have to do that thing. We have to look at the donors. This is very, everybody has been saying this for years when it comes to Joe Manchin and his ties with the coal industry, how he makes his money. And obviously, this was going to be a problem. There was that phone call that lobbyist, not knowing he was being recorded, leaked. And that he said, when we want things killed, we call senators like, and he said, Joe Manchin. And they do whatever we tell them to do. And so it's when you look at the numbers, when Joe Manchin is talking about having to explain it to the people in West Virginia, the people in West Virginia, piece by piece by piece, like the Build Back Better agenda.
What's going on now, Jake, in Washington, is the big money interests are pouring hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure that we continue to pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs, that the rich do not start paying their fair share of taxes. And I would have hoped that we could have had at least 50 Democrats on board who have the guts to stand up for working families and take on the lobbyists and the powerful special interests. Do you know how much money the pharmaceutical industry has spent in the last year on lobbying alone? Over $300 million. plus campaign contributions, plus all kinds of advertising. Fossil fuel industry is spending a fortune. Let's not kid ourselves. We have a corrupt political system dominated by big money interest. And finally, some of us are saying, let's stand up for working families. Average worker has not seen a pay raise in inflation accounted for dollars in 45 years, while the rich are becoming phenomenally richer. Corporate profits are at an all-time high. And what some of us are saying, maybe, we'll stand up for working families for a change. But apparently we don't have the 50 votes that we need.
Virginia, which is a red state, paid family leave, polls at 71%. In West Virginia, which is a red state, the child tax credits are expanding. The child tax credits are at 61%. Universal pre-K, 59%. I have a 9-page poll that I'm going to link in the show notes, because for West Virginia to be so red, a lot of people would be shocked that they support the Build Back Better plan, unless you think about it from an economic standpoint and you say maybe they support the Build Back Better plan because the state is a very economically depleted state. Maybe the people are hurting. And so when you have a program explained to them piece by piece by piece, it's very easy for them to support it and to recognize that it makes it better for them. So I'm going to link that entire poll in the show notes. I'm going to end it here. I had to do another show about the Biden administration has come out and now said that they will not be doing the college student debt forgiveness. So that is another plan that the administration has said that they were going to do that will now not be done. So we can count them. No $15 minimum wage. No college debt relief. And no human infrastructure bill. So thank you for tuning in. Of course, if you want to support the show, you can do so by going to www.patreon.com/TheDarrellMcLean Show. If you just can't get enough of your podcast needs today, listen to the T-Bone and Chick Brew Show on the same place you listen to this one, and see you on the next episode. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Of course, if you want to support the show, you can do so by going to www.patreon.com and getting a membership for as little as $3 a month. Again, that's www.patreon.com/TheDarrellMcLean Show. The Darrell McLean Show is fully listener-supported, independent media that won't lead you to tribalism. Get a membership and support independent media at www.patreon.com/TheDarrell McLean Show.